Sunday afternoon edition of the Dunked On Basketball podcast. The most recent game of the century is in the rearview mirror. We're going to talk about that Golden State San Antonio tilt. And also one of my favorite subjects around this time of year, this will be the third year that I have done it now, my rankings of the top 10 players in the NBA. Joining me for all this, Danny LaRue.
How you doing, sir?
Quite well. Had a good weekend down in LA, about to do the interminable drive back up the 5. But first, some podcasting. The biggest thing that I took away from that Golden State San Antonio game occurred before the game even started, and that was the Spurs not starting Tim Duncan.
And not only did he not start, I think he only played 8 minutes. So it was a very different Spurs team than I expected to see, even with the Warriors changing their starting lineup to accommodate not having Andrew Bogut.
Yeah, that's pretty remarkable that he only played 8 minutes. And I do think that, and we only saw, I think, 10 minutes from Spates and like 6 from Anderson Varejão or something like that. So with that being the case, it was kind of hard to find a matchup for Duncan. You would have hoped at least that every minute that Golden State had a traditional center on the floor that they could have gotten Duncan some minutes. But really, I think that the strategy was, and it's something that we anticipated way back in the fall talking about these two teams, that Tim Duncan might just be a little bit too slow to step out and switch on screens involving Steph Curry and Klay Thompson and get out to the three-point line. And to his amazing credit, and to Duncan's amazing credit as well, Greg Popovich realized that, decided he wanted to win this game, and took him out of the starting lineup when it became clear that Golden State was going to go small to begin.
And one of the takeaways that I had, though you can't read too much into a game, especially one where the players on the court were not necessarily representative of what a theoretical series would be, is that I don't know if it'll continue, but the tactical decision to make Curry and Klay do more of their offense as drivers than as shooters, I think is a brilliant one. And it ties in with one of the Warriors' greater weaknesses, which is that while they can score effectively in those cases, the Warriors do not get teams in foul trouble. So some of the ill effects that you see from basically seeding that are things that the Warriors are not particularly great at taking advantage of.
Yeah, one thing that really surprised me from the San Antonio side, and well, let's start with this, actually. How are you feeling about this matchup now after this game if you are both of these teams?
Well, if you're San Antonio, you can feel a lot more confident that your personnel can work defensively. As we said before, that isn't the bigger issue. The bigger issue is the Spurs offense, and I don't think we really saw too much that was indicative either way in that. I don't think my opinion changed there. But defensively, not necessarily from a results perspective, because I think that's overly simplistic, but from a process perspective and from a with the shots that the Warriors were generating, you know, thinking about it that way, I thought the Spurs did a much better job executing and got a little bit lucky, but I'm focusing more on the execution part of it.
Yeah, they definitely had the Warriors flummoxed. I think that Steph Curry looked real bad, whether that was due to the way that he was being played, it being the second night of a back-to-back, the Warriors' ghosts in San Antonio, both from that 2013 playoff series and just generally not having won a regular season game there in forever. Steph just didn't look good. And even when he was ISO'd on Tim Duncan one time, he wasn't able to take him. He wasn't able to get Tony Parker actually was D'ing Steph up pretty well. Steph didn't quite seem to have his usual burst off the dribble. Danny Green actually blocked one of his threes, which was the first three that he's had blocked.
Well, actually, I'll put in a correction there. Tim Roy sent me this, that they eventually recounted the Gobert block as a block after the game. So it actually is two now, which I'm happy about because yeah. Gobert did block it. So they rectified the record.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know what I even think of with Steph was made me think he played after he hit his head in game 4 against the Rockets last year. Like, he was almost playing in the same way. You know, just was not quite himself. And credit to Antonio, obviously, for doing a great job and him never letting him get any airspace. But even the few open shots that he did have, he wasn't really able to convert on. He was 4 out of 18, 1 of 12 from 3, only 6 assists as well. And then Klay Thompson, 7 out of 20. So they're a combined 11 of 38 from the field. Harrison Barnes, 3 out of 10. That was very disturbing. He had the worst plus minus on the team at negative 17. And he matched up against a power forward on the other team was a big time advantage for the Warriors, say in last year's playoffs. He was able to do well against Cleveland. He was able to do real well against Memphis in that circumstance. And now for him to not be able to take advantage of being guarded by Boris Diaw or LaMarcus Aldridge, that really is very concerning to me for the Warriors, because he has just looked like he's lacked a ton of explosion, just has not been the same player since returning from that high ankle sprain.
Yeah, we talk about the idea, it's one of my favorite terms just from an overall perspective, is competitive advantage. And when Harrison Barnes is being guarded by Boris Diaw, more on that end than the other end, that's something that you have to be able to take advantage of, because the Spurs have such good personnel that you're not going to have as many. It's not like when they face, let's say, the Pelicans or something, where the Warriors have advantages at four spots, so you can squeeze out benefits everywhere. When you're playing the Spurs, a team that has on a granular level, on a level and on an overall level, just so much talent, you're going to need to maximize those. And Draymond versus LaMarcus was probably a lot closer to what people expected, rather than him shutting him down the way that they did in the first game at Oracle.
Yeah, although LaMarcus really was only 11 out of 25 for 26 points. He really got off in the time in the second quarter. I think he scored 8 quick points when Draymond was out of the game. I'm going from memory here, but it's pretty close to that. So I'm not that concerned about the LaMarcus match. I mean, the fact that he was able to do something, he was able to get 25 field goal attempts off, was good. Kawhi Leonard, I was surprised at the fact that he was only 5 out of 14, although he did get to the line for 8 free throw attempts. You would have thought with Andre out that they wouldn't have had a great matchup for him. Barnes did actually do an okay job on Kawhi. Also, another thing is that the Warriors, I like the fact that they tried to put Steph in to start the second quarter to prop up some of those bench units when they felt like they had to play two bigs at once. But the fact that they insist on playing Anderson Varejao is ridiculous. He was negative 12 in 6 minutes. Spates was plus 9 in 11 minutes. The way Spates is shooting, even though it's only 2 out of 6, he at least opens the floor up. There's absolutely no reason for Varejao to ever play over Spates. I mean, unless you're going to say Spates is going to get tired, and he only played 11 minutes, so you can't make that argument. There's just no reason for Varejao to be out there. James Michael McAdoo is much better than Varejao as well. And so Kerr trotted out this lineup during really the one period of the game when the Warriors got that early second quarter. It was Curry, Varejao, Sean Livingston, James Michael McAdoo, and then Barbosa all on the floor. And even Steph can't prop up that unit. I mean, you basically have like 0.5 three-point shooters aside from Steph. That was just a horrible lineup. I'm just so sick of the Varejao experiment. I think they feel like we have to play him because we lured him to come here. It was never a good signing. He's like, you know, does a negative like 4 net rating playing on the greatest team of all time so far. Like, he's just got to get out of the rotation.
Yeah, it's a big issue. And of course, that's more of a, I don't think it's going to be an issue in the playoffs. It's more of a regular season thing. Cause if they're putting him on the floor in the playoffs, then they have big structural problems, because he's not worth that when you ratchet up everybody else's minutes, and presumably they'll be healthier specifically than they were in this game, but just more on the aggregate the last couple of months. He can't do that. And yeah, that lineup really bothered me too, because it goes back to an idea that I wrote about a few weeks ago, which is that I think especially against teams that aren't the Spurs, because they're so good, you have to think about it a little bit differently. But you want to make sure that you're utilizing the personnel that you have. You know, you want to utilize Curry to the maximum of his ability. And when they can basically help off of everyone else, you're limiting what he can do. I said it was like tying a hand behind his back. And that's kind of what that did. But I don't think that's going to happen in the playoffs. I don't think that seeing those kind of lineups now is indicative of anything. The other thing that I wanted to mention is that I was very surprised we actually did see bits and pieces of Danny Green guarding Curry, and I thought he did a very good job.
Yeah, and he's guarded him in that first game, too. I think he just didn't take many of his shots with him. From San Antonio's perspective, they did a lot of things a lot better. They went balls to the wall in this game. Like, they really tried to win. Kawhi played 38 minutes, LaMarcus 37, Boris Diaw played 35 minutes. So that was definitely a departure from Pop's usual kind of rest guys strategy. They really wanted to get this one. Still only scored 87 points, but they did play a lot slower. Seth actually indicated that their average shot attempt, their possessions were a lot longer. I think they took their average shot attempt 14 seconds into the shot clock, and they held the Warriors to one of their slowest games. They were taking their average shot much later into the shot clock as well. So that was all great for San Antonio. The problem for San Antonio is they scored 87 points. And this was really the Warriors game from hell, and they lost by 8 with a bunch of guys who aren't going to be getting minutes. You know, really, if you look at it, 3 of the Warriors' 8 best players, maybe 3 of the Warriors' 7 best players, did not play in this game. And so this is the Warriors' game from hell. They lost by 8. And in San Antonio's game from hell, they lost by 30. And also the fact that Duncan barely played in this game, even against sort of a neutered Warriors death lineup without Iguodala, that shows that in that previous game, the we didn't have Duncan excuse like isn't really an excuse anymore. So I think ultimately this game did not change my opinion too much one way or the other. I think that if these teams match up, it'll probably be Warriors in 6 or 7. And San Antonio is really hard to beat at home. Their crowd was great. Steph is not going to go 4 of 18 and 1 of 12 from 3 again when these teams play. And I think it's telling that for all you want to talk about the craftiness of Pop, he really did go all out to get this one.
He did. And one of the other sub-pattern things that we should mention is that Tim Duncan only played 8 minutes. David West played 7:59. So James Michael McAdoo played more minutes than both of them.
Yeah, that's surprising that West played so little. Yeah, Kyle Anderson actually played more than both of them. And he didn't do much offensively, but he actually had a pretty decent defensive game. He's got, you can say what you will about his defense, but he does have more mobility than Duncan and West do. And I mean, the Spurs were wonderful defensively in this game. They switched impeccably. Really, the only time the Warriors were able to take advantage of that without having to go one-on-one was out of timeouts, where Kerr has become a master of setting up these plays to take advantage of the switch, where they'll set a hard screen, get a switch, and then immediately someone will cut to the basket and he can get layups off of that. But generally, the Warriors haven't done as good a job of that. That's going to have to be something that gets a little bit more ingrained into their thinking. So definitely some concern for the Warriors. You know, it's not like they blew this team out, but I mean, I think this is almost just about exactly what I expected to happen in this game, frankly.
Yeah, other than the score just being that low, you know, I expected maybe like 90 to 85 or something like that. It was about what I expected.
Yeah, and this is a wonderful Spurs defensive team. They are statistically one of the top 5 teams of all time. And also, we still have the possibility now that both teams could go 41-0 at home.
Yeah, and also the Warriors are going to have another chance to stop the Spurs streak from passing the Warriors streak, even if the Warriors lose against the Clippers in their next home game, because it'll be 48, I believe, when the Warriors come back.
So it's 62-7 now for the Warriors. They can only lose twice more and still set the record for most wins of the season, 73-9. What are your latest thoughts on whether they get there?
If they were healthy, I still think they would, but it's so much more likely now with Iguodala out. We don't, as last I heard, we haven't gotten a specific, the MRI results aren't in on Bogut, but I think that it's unlikely, but still possible that they do it, just because they'll drop a game somewhere. They've been, excluding last night's game, they've been undefeated against the 10 best teams in the league. When you're missing so many important players, that seems hard. But the fortunate thing for the Warriors in that sense of their quest for history is that their next game against one of the teams with the 10 best records on the road is the Spurs at the end of the season. So if they take care of business, specifically the game on Wednesday against the Clippers, they could do it even with an imperfect roster.
So, yeah, they're at the Wolves tomorrow. You have to imagine that will be a pretty easy victory. They're at home against the Clippers. No Blake Griffin. I think even without Andre, you're probably going to win that. Same thing at home against the Mavericks. Then Sixers and Wizards at home. I think they're good on that. The next real danger game that I see for them is at the Jazz on the second end of a back-to-back. And it seems like Iguodala will probably be back for that one. They sort of thought it was going to be like a 2-week type of injury for him with that ankle sprain. Bogut, Kerr said that he doesn't expect him to miss a ton of time, even though a couple games type of thing, even though we haven't gotten the MRI results back. So, if I look at the schedule, I think the losable games to me are at Jazz versus Spurs, at Spurs. Maybe you could say Blazers at home as well. Those are the ones that I would really be focusing on. The Celtics, that might have been a losable game at home, but if Jay Crowder isn't back by then, there's no way the Celtics are winning that game. They've been awful since he went out. So I think, if they can win 2 out of 3 or even 1 out of 3 of those tough games, I think they get there. I think they are still projected to get there by the projection systems now. So I think they're going to do it.
You think they're going to get 73, or you think, because you said before you thought they were going to get 72.
Yeah, I think they are going to get 73, actually.
Wow, so we've switched.
That's funny, yeah. It shows you how we have absolutely no method to this. Also, just because I think they played pretty well, or at least well enough since Andre's gone out, that I feel like they're going to be okay.
Yeah, well, I think we both agree that we'll have a much better idea by the Clippers game and the Mavericks game right after. But I don't think they're going to lose against the Mavs. They're not good enough right now.
Yeah, their defense is not going to work. Yeah, I mean, I thought that game against the Mavs might be losable on the road without Andre, and they played really well. They won by 18 in that game. So, all right, you want to do some top 10 players in the NBA? Why don't you talk about what your criteria was? We do not know what each other's lists are. We're coming in both blind here, but we are using the same criteria.
So the main thing that I wanted to impart with this is the way that I visualize tiers. And it's the same thing when I do team stuff, like for when I did it for Real GM, I did pre-season previews, is that within a tier, I'm completely fine. I think it's the phrase would probably be reasonable minds can disagree. So, you know, if you have guys in the same tier, that means, okay, you know, if you see it the other way, that's fine. But between tiers, I think that's a much harder argument to make. So that's where I feel that there's a substantive difference. So, you know, if I have somebody in tier two and somebody in tier three, it's going to take a lot for me to put them over that other player. And I, with all these things, I try to, as best as possible, try to neutralize things like how they are on their specific team and, you know, things like that, because that's not really fair. Because, you know, if you're talking about, let's say, Kawhi Leonard on the Spurs or whoever else, Russell Westbrook on the Thunder, you know, those, that it's not fair to give a player a benefit or a demerit because they're in a perfect or imperfect system.
Yeah, obviously it is difficult to divorce someone's performance from the situation that he is in. But to me, the list is, and I'm doing the tiers the same way as you, but this is the answer to the question of which player would I pick if I needed to win as many games as I could in a regular season with average NBA talent around him? I mean, or maybe even if I needed to win a game, because we're not really penalizing for guys who play, you know, 33 minutes instead of 38 or something like that. I mean, I'm definitely giving the benefit to the guy who's superior on a per minute basis in these levels, especially because a lot of those guys don't play that many minutes because they're so good and their teams are winning, and they don't need to play in the fourth quarter. So that's kind of the question. Tier one, Stephen Curry by himself, pretty obvious to me.
No arguments. That was actually probably the only easy call for me, was that.
Yeah, I agree with you. And Steph, I use basically three stats to inform this, and we're not going religiously with the stats here, but it provides some background, some context. We use ESPN's RPM, which purports to measure a player's impact on his team's performance when he is on the court versus off the court, adjusting for his teammates and the players he is facing on the opponent. That also, though, has a significant component with their box score stats as well. It's called a prior that it creates part of it. And then PR, a flawed stat. We get that. I've gotten some crap for ever using it, but it is a good shorthand. It's something that people understand a little bit more still, and definitely a stat that correlates with winning much more than, say, points per game or any of these other things. And, you know, for PR, basically 30 is awesome. That's like MVP level season. There's probably only, I think, maybe 20 or 25 players who have a single season PR of 30 and above. Steph Curry has the greatest PR of all time at 32.5, which is, I think, 0.6 or 0.7 better than the greatest ever, which is some of those late Jordan seasons in the 80s. And then, I shouldn't say late Jordan seasons, but Jordan seasons in the late 80s. And then LeBron James in 09 and 10. And then his Heat years in 2012 and 13.
Can I make a small note on PER?
Yes, please.
Part of the reason that I like to use it is that it's also a statistic where the flaws of it are well known. So
yeah.
I think we are adept at talking about those. So yeah, it doesn't value a lot of things like individual defense, and sometimes I think it overly rewards less efficient usage, like I used to criticize it for Monte Ellis. But those are things that we know, and those are things we can discuss honestly. When you have no stat is perfect, and it's easier to discuss something when we know the strengths and weaknesses and can be candid about it than something else, because there is no perfect solution.
Yeah, Steph, number one in PER is It's actually number two in RPM behind Kawhi Leonard, although a lot of Kawhi's impact comes from his defense, which is like, actually higher than his offense. Steph doesn't have a ton of defensive impact, although I think he's overall is decent. But Steph has the best true shooting percentage in the league. He is averaging the most points per game. Kevin Pelton's warp statistic, which he was kind enough to send me, that is basically wins above replacement. He has an 85% win percentage, which is by far the highest that he has had for this year. And he also leads in that warp statistic despite playing a lot less minutes than some other guys like Russell Westbrook. So I think Steph is arguably having the greatest season of all time. His team is having the greatest season of all time. His individual offensive rating, the offensive rating of his team when he's on the court is, when I looked at it a couple days ago, one of the top three ever. With Manu Ginobili in 2011-12 and Steve Nash in one of his sudden seasons, the only other two guys. So, yeah, I mean, when you're having the best season ever, or arguably the best season ever, you're in tier one by yourself.
And he does it in a way that, yeah, his defense is, let's say, a small positive, if you want to argue, you know, it's your shades of gray with that. But we talked about it a lot. Offense is really important, and his presence makes the Warriors a successful offensive team. And while Klay Thompson is a great scorer, the reason that it works is Stephen Curry.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And they're, again, have one of the greatest offenses ever. It's just, he's having a monster year. I think we can move on from this because It's just so incredibly clear.
Okay, so I'll let you initiate with tier two. I guess I think the number of players and then who, I guess, is probably the way to do it.
Yeah, so I have five players in my tier two. It was very, very difficult for me to differentiate between these guys. But I'm going to start mine with Kevin Durant as the number two best player in the league.
I'll foreshadow one. I agree with you on number two. My tier two is only two guys.
Interesting. That is very interesting, actually. Okay. Who else is in your tier two?
Kawhi Leonard.
All right. So you have KD and Kawhi. The rest of my tier two was Russell Westbrook, LeBron James, and Chris Paul.
I have exactly the same three guys.
Yeah. But you have them as a tier below KD and Kawhi. Why is that?
So it's a little bit different for both guys. And for me with Durant, I think that he is more, at this point, of course, this is comparing different parts of their career. His presence offensively, I think, is a more reliable positive than LeBron's. And LeBron's defense has eroded to the level where that isn't the advantage it was when LeBron was winning MVPs over Durant. So you have that. And then Kawhi Leonard is a very different guy. I mean, the Kawhi Kevin Durant was actually something I wrestled with arguably more than anything else. And for Kawhi, if you're arguing it on this year, Kawhi has probably been better. But something we discussed about, I think it was a week and a half ago, is that Kawhi's defense is real. That's completely legit. I have no opposition to that. He's the defensive player of the year. He's an impactful guy there. This year, his offense is kind of at another level. I think that is my instinct is that it's a little bit higher. Like it's not going to say it's not repeatable. I just think that it's probably above what I would expect moving forward. And so that's why I put him below. But the aggregate impact for me of Kawhi versus LeBron as a regular season player, to me, I think that difference is pretty substantial right now.
Yeah, I think that's right. Kawhi was shooting like 50% on threes for a large portion of the year. That's not going to sustain. He gets a ton of his offense through mid-rangers. He's great at those, but still, I think he might have been shooting a little over his head. Or at the very least, you can say we are not certain that he can continue to shoot at this level, because especially from the three-point shooting, he's shooting at an all-time great level. His defense is unbelievable. That's not going anywhere. But I still have a little bit of a preference for offense over defense, because I believe that the difference between the best and worst offensive players is much greater than the best and worst defensive players. I think the difference between Kawhi and Doug McDermott on defense is less than the difference between Durant and Omer Asik on offense, you know, if you want to think of it that way. So,
and you could argue that it's more exploitable on offense. You know, like we saw that with the Warriors in the playoff series, like those great weaknesses on offense, I think it's harder to paper over that than a great defensive weakness, unless it's at center.
And the ultimate tiebreaker among the two for me is that KD is playing in arguably one of the worst systems out there with some pretty bad supporting talent. And he still makes that team really probably the second best offense in the league. And His combination of volume and efficiency is basically something that we almost had never seen before. So a couple of those LeBron seasons would come into play until what Steph Curry's otherworldly season this year. So I think KD is very clearly the second best offensive player in the league. And also that he's just been doing it for so long too. So I think that's why I went with KD. And I think that just he's so efficient. He is definitely the offensive player on another team who would scare me the most if I were an opposing coach.
So what I'm interested in with you from, so it's funny that we agree on the top three. I think we agree on the reasoning for that. So what is your rationale? I assume it's based on the offense difference for putting the next three guys in the same group as Kawhi.
Yeah, I think that those guys are all, if you look at the stats, these guys are all pretty darn close to one another, you know, really within a couple points of PR in Kevin Pelton's warp statistic, at least on a per minute basis. They are all pretty darn close to one another, you know, and their RPMs are all pretty close as well. So I really, statistically, I don't see enough of a significant difference between them to really put them in a different tier. I think it is, like you said as well, there are reasonable arguments for all of those guys, even LeBron James, who I probably have. Yeah, I guess I would probably have Chris Paul still lower than LeBron. But with the way Paul was actually not in the tier with these guys last year, and with the way that he has played without Blake Griffin this year, I felt like I had to kind of put him in there because he still has been fantastic on a team that really has had little else, other than, you know, a real great shooter in Redick, but not someone who gets his own shot, and DeAndre who can catch alley-oops, and that's about it.
Yeah.
Offensively. So, I mean, it basically kind of went down to subjective, but I think when you can't make a real good argument, or at least perhaps there are reasonable arguments for all these guys. I mean, Russell Westbrook, he's number two in Kevin Pelton's warp statistic, and I think number two in his per minute win percentage as well. Kawhi Leonard is number one in RPM. You know, I think all these guys have, with the various statistics you look at, are slightly better or slightly worse than one another. And I couldn't really think of a great subjective differentiator between any of them, even though I do think KD would be my pick as the number two and Kawhi as the number three among those guys. But and Westbrook is not quite efficient enough for my taste. But with all that said, I mean, I think those guys are all very, very similar, and I struggled to choose between them.
So one other stat I dug up that I wanted to pull out just because I think this speaks to Kawhi's defensive impact is so. It's ridiculous, but the Spurs with Kawhi, without Tim Duncan, who is another, of course, hugely positive player for them, they're only allowing 95 points per 100 possessions this year. And so that's incredibly good. And so you would lean towards that being an outlier because teams don't allow 95 points per 100, even in smaller sample sizes. Last year, that was 96.1. So you're starting to see that he is one of the few non-centers who can reliably help. And of course, the Spurs have a great system. They have great players. They have one of the best, if not the best, coach of all time. But he is one of the few perimeter players that I can think of who can make that sort of an impact.
Yeah, and while we've talked about this before, it bears repeating the idea defensively of value over replacement position, that if you have a great defensive center, it's a lot easier to find another center who is still going to be a good defensive player than it is to find a wing that has Kawhi's impact.
Yeah, so I just wanted to mention that. So, okay, so we have the general contours of the next group together. How did you...
So what was your ordering of those last three
That's
guys?
That's where I was going to get to.
This is your third tier. Yeah, sorry.
So, okay, so for me, I wanted to start this with the question of Westbrook versus Paul, and I'll throw in LeBron afterwards. But so I went with Westbrook. I think I think right now it is harder to make the case just on a game-to-game season basis because I think Chris Paul is a clearly superior defender. And, I mean, it's not a huge difference, but I think he's better. And I've said it before, but one of the ways that I like to think about an offensive player and their value in this kind of a context in particular is, does their presence alone mean that you will be successful, in this case, as a primary ball handler, offensively? And Chris Paul has done that. This year is the first year in his time with the Clippers that they have not been top five in offensive efficiency. They're sixth. And of course, they've been missing Blake Griffin, who's a wonderful player, and they've been really good when Chris Paul's been on the floor. So I think that you could make an argument for Chris Paul. That's why they're in the same tier. I ended up going with Westbrook because the way that he can dominate is a little bit different. And I think that he, again, is also benefiting from or is being hurt by an imperfect system. So I think that when you're thinking about what we have seen, is it representative of them? If you, you know, threw everything in a pot and mixed it up, I think that Westbrook benefits more from that changeover than Chris Paul does.
You know, I really struggle with the Westbrook or Paul question. Westbrook has a mild advantage in pretty much all of the statistics. PR, 1.8 points higher. RPM is 1.8 points higher. And, you know, you don't want to get too granular with this stuff because it's all kind of an estimate. He's better in KP's warp statistic and on both a per minute and overall season to date. Maybe what I would say is that Westbrook has performed better these last couple of years, but that I would almost rather have Paul on my team.
That's where I got to, too. I was so mad with it.
But that does, you know, that almost seems irrational. I mean, I just like Chris Paul's game a little bit better. I think that he has a more versatile game. He can shoot the three better. I think he's better defensively than Westbrook is. You can plug and play him in more situations, whereas Russ, he's always going to have a high usage rate no matter who he has around him. Now, he needs to play that way for Oklahoma City, but he's not going to make standstill threes at all. He will not be incredibly efficient. I mean, Chris, we've seen be more efficient in prior seasons when he's had Blake Griffin playing with him. I mean, Russ can definitely do more things. Like if you're like, all right, I need somebody to get me a shot, that's probably Russ more than it is Chris Paul. And also I think Russ's health is less concerning than Paul's is. You know, he always seems to come up with some kind of muscle injury in the playoffs or something like that. I think you also got to think back to what Paul did in the playoffs last year, which was pretty unbelievable what he did in that San Antonio series, especially. So I don't know. I really struggled with this. I ultimately went with Westbrook just because he has a little bit of an advantage. He's a little bit younger. He probably doesn't have as good of a support system from a coaching standpoint. But it was a real struggle for me. And I think we're in agreement there. How about LeBron James? I think the average person would probably still say that LeBron is the second best player in the league. He did have what a lot of people thought was an unbelievable finals last year. I am not as high on that as some people are. Why was he below some of these other guys to you?
Well, so I had him above Westbrook and Paul, though, again, they're right next to each other. But the reasoning for it, for me, why he's below the other three, you know, behind Curry, Durant and Leonard, is that he's below Durant because I think he's an inferior offensive player right now. He's being inferior than Kevin Durant is no criticism. You know, Kevin Durant's an incredible offensive player, even though he doesn't run the offense in the same way that LeBron does a lot of the time. But LeBron's weaknesses are becoming a little bit more pronounced, especially his shooting, though it has gotten a little bit better, I believe, since many of us have lampooned it earlier. But His presence doesn't mean what it used to. And one of the things that was really challenging for me with present LeBron versus Paul and Westbrook is his defense is so inconsistent, you know, and it's even more consistently just not there than it used to be. And there are plenty of good reasons for that. He turned 31 recently. The Cavs are not motivated by regular season success. They're going to have the one seed, all that kind of stuff. But these other guys do bring it. Kawhi Leonard is the defensive player of the year for a reason. Durant, you know, he has his moments on that end. And so the fact that that argument is less clear than it used to be, like that was always his trump card, was that, oh, LeBron, you know, he makes his team so much better offensively. And then defensively, he's better than all the other wings. And he doesn't have that anymore, to be completely honest about it. That might not be true in the playoffs. You know, maybe he'll bring it back a little bit, especially if his offensive role is going to be less than it was in the late playoffs when they were missing all those important guys. But I don't give him much of a boost for that of the, oh, well, he could do it. You know, that's kind of like the whole Kobe Bryant, oh, if he tried on defense more, he'd be better. I don't give a guy a lot of credence for that, but I give him a little bit.
Well, and that was the trope starting in 2013-14 with Miami. All right, he's not trying anymore. But it's really been now 3 years of slippage in his defense. He could bring it on individual plays every once in a while when he, like, tries to really get in the guys and set the tone, but then ultimately, he's not really doing it that well. Let me interrupt for some breaking news here, though. My cousin, who coaches the East Harlem Pride girls basketball in Chicago, just texted me to say she won the state championship with her team. So
fantastic.
Congratulations, Rachel Goldman. I had to give you a shout out on the podcast. back to LeBron, the decline in his shooting over the second half of last year, last year's playoffs, this year, not able to make threes. Now, when you're talking about plug and playing him, it becomes much more difficult if he can't hit a standstill three, if teams are actually going to be leaving him. Now he has to have the ball in his hands. He is not as efficient as he once was. I think that he also contributes a lot to Cleveland's struggles to get a more advanced offensive system where they're moving the ball from side to side. I think down the end of games, he insists on having the ball in his hands all the time. I think all of that is just, he's still a wonderful player. They are going to be they're going to win the East likely for a reason. And they're also not really going to be a threat probably to the Warriors or Spurs in large part because he just isn't the same player anymore. And I'm not going to keep giving it to guys on reputation. I mean, I think if you drop off for half a year, then maybe you can still get it on a reputation, but it's been just steady decline. That's just what happens when you're 31. He's an all-time great player. And it's also just instructive that even when you're one of the best players ever, unless you're Michael Jordan, when there was kind of an artificial talent deficit when he was in his 30s, even if you're one of the best players ever, when you're 30, 31, you're probably not going to be the best player in the league anymore.
Another part of the reason I had him over Westbrook and Paul, which again, it's you could put them in any order, I wouldn't fight you for a second, is positional value. And what I mean by that is there are very few individuals that can have the usage and the playmaking that you have that he can do defending forwards. And it allows you to get a different kind of point guard. I'm somebody who loves to have two guys who can initiate offense, which is a lot easier when you can have somebody who's 6'3 or 6'2 or 6'1 do it. And you know, if you're Paul or Westbrook and you want that kind of a thing, you're going to be looking for something much narrower. There are less than 10 guys in the league that I would trust to have that role who don't defend point guards. And so for me, that is probably what nudges him, among other things, what nudges him a little bit above those guys.
Yeah, and value over replacement position, right? Like,
right.
There just aren't as many good wings as there are point guards. So that's a great point there. So my final tier two was KD was as the number two player, Kawhi number three, Russell Westbrook number four, LeBron James five, Chris Paul at number six, rounding out my tier number two. And that those last three guys round out your tier number three. Was that the order that you had those guys in?
I had LeBron, Westbrook, Paul. Oh, one thing I wanted to ask you, if this is going to be an abstraction, but when would the last time that LeBron was the fifth best player or lower in the league be? Would it be his rookie year?
No, probably 04, 05.
Okay.
I would say would be it. I mean, he wasn't really, I think he averaged like 27 a game that year. It was a big breakout year for him. But yeah, maybe even, I mean, certainly by his third year, 05, 06, like the first year, because they didn't even make the playoffs in his first 2 years. So yeah, I would say probably then would be it. But
that's pretty incredible.
I also think there is also, I think, a lot more competition for some of those on this list even than last year. And one of the things we'll get to actually is kind of comparing the trends from my 2014 list, 2015 to this year. But let's get to tier three now. How many players do you have in this tier?
The rest of my top 10.
Does your tier three actually extend beyond the top 10 if you had to do it that way?
There might be one guy that it would include, but really it would be those guys maybe. Yeah, I mean, there'd be one more guy.
Yeah. All right. Well, so give us who you got there then.
So I'll include the fifth player just to make it more fair. So it'd be
sure.
Anthony Davis, Kyle Lowry, James Harden, Draymond Green, and Paul George.
Well, wait a minute. Yeah, that's 12.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. That's five guys. Five guys. We already had six.
Oh, this is riveting radio here as we argue about counting. Okay, so you have Paul George in that tier, huh?
He's the guy that I don't have in my top 10, but would be the other guy that I would have in that group.
You did not say Damian Lillard, did you?
I did not.
Okay. Why do you think he is out of that tier? I guess he's probably out of that tier to me, too. I guess I'll say what mine is first.
Sure.
Kyle Lowry, James Harden, Anthony Davis. That rounds out my top 10 and my tier 3.
Okay. Wait, doesn't that mean I think that makes 9. Whatever.
Yeah, you're right. It does. Yeah, 7, 8.
So the issue is you can't count, but that's okay.
That is really a big problem with making a top 10 list when you can't count.
I think a place to start with this is though we can go through the order, is point guards, because that you're right. That was something that I was between. So Lowry made my list, and the two guys that I considered that didn't make this or, you know, the expanded tier are John Wall and Damian Lillard.
Interesting. Yeah, I have Wall actually way below a ton of these guys because he's just been way too inefficient this year, and I think his defense has slipped a ton. So, yeah, I guess my 10th guy I think would be Damian Lillard. But in that same tier with him, going into honorable mention, I would have DeMarcus Cousins, Paul George, and Draymond Green.
Yeah, Boogie's another guy who I would nearly put, you know, he's right in the same mix. But, like, I wouldn't put, as you did, because you just drew the line slightly differently, I wouldn't have Cousins in the same tier, let's say, as Anthony Davis or James Harden.
Yeah, and I would probably have Draymond as the second highest guy other than Lillard. Lillard, I think, leads that tier to me just because his shooting is so good. He's been on the upswing since the All-Star break. It's had some absolutely spectacular, unstoppable games.
You have to give him a lot of credit because their offense in particular has still performed super well without nearly as good constituent talent. And that's something that we always like to give guys credit for. We gave it Chris Paul a lot of credit for that earlier in this, and Damian Lillard's done largely the same thing.
Yeah, and one of the things that has really helped with Lillard is when you've got him, and obviously McCollum is part of this too, he is a guy where you can get away with not having as much shooting at some of the other positions, guys like Aminu, Henderson, so they can actually have a good offense, and yet their defense gets propped up a little bit as well, despite the fact they don't really have any good defensive big men, and because Lillard and McCollum are not great on defense themselves, though Lillard has gotten better as a leader and a defender this year. But now you can play these wings who aren't as good as shooters, and it doesn't matter as much. So in a weird way, Lillard's offense, and obviously someone like Steph Curry would fall into this category too, Lillard's offense helps your defense, whereas someone like LeBron, Westbrook, guys who aren't going to shoot threes themselves off the pick and roll and draw the defense so far from the basket, those guys you can't play non-shooters around because then they'll just help off of those guys. Helping off of non-shooters onto Lillard when he's doing a high pick and roll 25 feet from the basket is much more difficult.
You've sold me on Lillard being in this tier. I made a mistake. He should be in there. I'd still have him below, but he still wouldn't make my top 10, but he deserves to make it. He deserves to be in that tier.
Yeah, and last year I had him at number 10 on basically the same argument of how powerful that shooting behind the pick and roll can be. He's been more efficient on that shot this year. I felt bad about that when they got waxed in the playoffs and his defense was horrible, but I think the way the Blazers have performed this year, I feel comfortable with him at number 10, but I still have him below Lowry, Harden, and AD. I did have them in that order. What do you think of those three guys? I think Lowry is the one who, to a lot of casual fans, would be pretty controversial. He was someone who didn't even get into my honorable mentions last year.
He has been fantastic this year, and I think you considering Lowry and Harden together is a great way to make the argument for Lowry because Harden has similar strengths, but we just talk about them more. So Harden's presence makes the Rockets successful, even though nobody else in their team is having a particularly good offensive season. But Lowry is a meaningfully better defender. James Harden had that little uptick last year when he finished second in the MVP and first in whatever the player's MVP was called. And he hasn't been that. And so for me, the difference in offensive value is smaller than the difference in defensive value. And Lowry he's been consistent enough about it that I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt in that sense. But that's, I think the argument for Lowry is basically the argument for Harden.
I don't know if I agree with that because I think Lowry's defense is better than Harden's is.
Yeah.
But I see you on the sense that, you know, he's really the only offensive player. You know, they've got DeRozan, who's not incredibly efficient. He can kind of get you some buckets and make sure that your offense isn't going to be horrible, but he's not going to be efficient enough to really drive what has been a really good offense for Toronto, really for a while. And Lowry was playing at this level last year, too. Let's not forget. And then he just wore down the second half of last year. So that made me feel a little bit better about having him up there. He is number 6 in RPM. He, I think, is 11 in PER. And he is number 4 in Kevin Pelton's warp statistic. He plays a lot of minutes as well. And considering the fact that he played it close to this level last year before he wore down, how good Toronto has been this year, I think it's justified. Now, if I had to say who's going to be on this list next year, you know, I probably wouldn't say Kyle Lowry, but he's another one of these guys too. His ability to shoot the three off the pick and roll. He can also play off the ball coming off of screens, which a lot of these guys can't do, his offensive versatility. And then, you know, he's a solid defensive point guard. All of that means that he has to be in this list, despite the fact that he just has not, doesn't have the pedigree of some of these other guys.
Random thought that is relevant to this conversation. I was just thinking about how crazy people are going to go over Lillard if they upgrade their talent, considering the ridiculous cap space they have this summer. Like, if they get, let's say they got Hassan Whiteside like Kevin Pelton did in our mock offseason, like, I think that totally changes his reputation around the league. Like, it'll finally catch up with where we kind of think of him.
Harden, to me, is having just about as good of an offensive season to me as last year. Maybe it's a little bit worse, but Houston's offense, I think, with less supporting talent around him, has been just as good as they have last year. But obviously his defense has slipped. I think the fact that your best player is not your hardest worker, the fact that he has all these ridiculous Vine lapses. He was better last year. He's been not as good this year. They just have been a train wreck on defense. That's been where the decline has been almost exclusively for Houston. So you can't put him in that tier that's a little harder, but he still is a wonderful, wonderful offensive player.
So let's get to Anthony Davis. I can't remember exactly where you had him last year. Was it 4?
Yeah, I had him in the top tier last year.
Like, I mean, so for me, we haven't seen much of a degradation from him. It's just that everything around him has become ash and ruin. And I think it's hard for almost anybody to look good. I mean, that it's making me think about some of those early LeBron Cavs teams a little bit differently, just for how much he was able to elevate. But I don't think anybody could really do much with the injuries and the flawed personnel that they had. It would have been hard to succeed for anybody short of, you know, prime superstar guys.
I disagree with you. I think his defense has really slipped this year, whether it's due to the guys around him or not. He was very good on defense last year. He just has not been blocking as many shots, whether it's due to the system or just his own not playing with as much energy. He hasn't been nearly as good on the offensive boards. Last year, he had a PER that was almost 31. This year, it's like 26.
Yeah.
And not only that, so his box score contributions have slipped a ton, and also his defense has slipped a ton. I had him solidly in the top tier. There are 5 guys in my top tier last year, and he was, I had him at number 3 last year, actually. And just the team performed a lot better, right? Like, I mean, he was a big part of that. So yeah, he definitely has slipped. I do think the fact that he's shooting threes can help him overall, but just watching him, he just is not the defensive force that he was last year. Every once in a while, he'll get engaged for stretches of 3 or 4 minutes, but it's been a very disappointing season for him. And at the age that he is, you would hope that it would be a little bit better. How much of that is coaching? How much of that is the fact that they started really poorly? And that, but he certainly has had plenty of motivation, right? Like, he's got $24 million on the line. If he doesn't make an All-NBA team, or if he starting the All-Star game would have been another one. So it's not like you can say he doesn't have the motivation still. I think he just hasn't been as good.
Has this season, because it has for me, but I'll lead you into the question, has this season changed the way that you're thinking about who you want to put next to him, like whether you want a real rim protector or you want to go more like a Ryan Anderson floor spacer type?
Oh, I don't think so yet, just because it has been so incredibly chaotic. I do think that having him play center some, having him play power forward some is okay, and he does still have the physical tools. I think that he can get there defensively, but maybe another year of this, and then it might start to change my thinking.
Yeah, I'm becoming more amenable to the idea that you want to have somebody who can protect the rim next to him, just because you need to have that defensive foundation. However, one of the kind of weird benefits of New Orleans being in the situation they are is that they're not going to be in the position to make that decision this year anyway, so they'll get more information before they have to make a long-term pairing decision with him, because they should not re-sign Ryan Anderson at his presumptive price, because he will not age well with this team.
It's disappointing for AD, because it looks like after this year, he's sort of on his way to just being a LaMarcus Aldridge who can get some dunks too. You know, I was hopeful that he could become a transformational defensive player, and that and his very solid offense would be something that could be transformational, and that is just not going to happen. It's at least not this year. So was there anyone else here that we feel like we should kind of talk about that might be a controversial omission?
Well, I think we should talk a little bit about Draymond Green, just because he's a hard guy to place in this, because we talked about how Durant and Westbrook might be in imperfect systems. He is in the perfect combination of system and personnel, but he is a part of what makes it all work. His defensive value is incredible, and we talk.
Oh yeah, he makes their defensive system.
Right, right. He makes their defensive system.
I mean, to me, it's still this year. He and Kawhi are 1 and 2 in defensive player of the year. I'd probably go with Kawhi just because the Spurs have been this all-time great unit, but I don't see anyone that's even in the conversation for number two for best defensive player right now. Do you?
No, and his offensive role can get understated with the magnificence of Curry, because you think about the Draymond Curry pick and roll, and there are very few human beings on the planet who could play that screener role, then get the ball and actually create as regularly as he does. And so that wouldn't work as well with somebody less than Curry, but that value is still there regardless of who you put around him. So he would still be an incredibly useful player.
And they're running a 4-1 pick and roll now with him handling the ball too. That's been completely unstoppable. I mean, Draymond is number 3 in RPM, and that is even his box score stats are pretty good, but he doesn't put up the same box score stats as some of these other guys. He's much lower in the PER and Kevin Pelton's warp rankings than some of the other guys in this conversation. So you know that a lot of that is just the on-off metrics getting him that high. Defensively, he is a 5.24 defensive RPM, which is completely insane. Usually it's only centers who have that. He's actually higher in that than Kawhi is. His ability to switch, his long arms, he makes people miss these jumpers twice a game that nobody else in the league really kind of gets guys like that. To my mind, I think that he still is someone who, if he's on your team, you can probably make a good defense out of his abilities if you have even semi-decent coaching, and then his versatility as well. I mean, the only thing that holds him back is he's just not that great of a one-on-one scorer, and his three-point shooting also has declined a little bit since Kerr returned. Whether that's regression or coaching, you can argue, but I think that's closer to what his true ability is. He's definitely right in that last tier to me. It just happens that we're cutting this off at 10, but I think, Cousins, George, Lillard, I think he's right up there with those guys for me.
So we've talked about this with Chris Paul and Russell Westbrook, but as great as James Harden is, if I had a blank canvas in terms of the rest of the team and I had to choose between one of the two of them, I would probably be more comfortable taking Draymond Green, just because if you got a superior talent at any other position, I think you could deal with it more than Harden. But Harden is still the better player right now. But I was thinking about that in that context.
Yeah, other than maybe Steph, or even someone like Klay Thompson, he would actually fit in amazingly well to anybody's system, or KD too, because he can shoot. I mean, Draymond is right up there as far as his plug-and-play ability. You don't have the same concerns with Russ or even LeBron, even Chris Paul, a guy who's pretty ball dominant. Draymond can have the ball as much or as little as you need him to, and he's going to be awesome on defense and has a great level of versatility as well.
And he allows you to play a less elite defensive center, which is, as you talked about with Damian Lillard, is a huge benefit. It's kind of the reverse of Damian Lillard, but in that sense.
Well, so let's do a little comparison now of how things have evolved over the last couple of years. And, we'll go back just to 2015. I had 5 guys in my top tier. I had Steph number 1, which I will pat myself on the back for a little bit in March of 2015 to have had him as number 1. I think that turned out to be a somewhat prescient pick. LeBron James was 2, AD 3, James Harden 4, Westbrook 5 was where I had it. AD really the big disappointment there. I think LeBron going from 2 to 5 in my rankings, kind of about what you would expect with another year of age, although the shooting drop-off has been a little bit more concerning than you might have expected. And then Harden dropping just because of his defense. I mean, all that kind of makes pretty good sense to me. And Westbrook is, about pretty much the same, I think, as I had him last year. I think he's had about the same season this year as he did last year.
Yeah, and so then from there, you had Chris Paul by himself, right?
Yeah, I did. And I think what finally changed that for me is that without Blake Griffin, he was able to become a better scorer, more dominant, higher usage rate. I thought last year the reason I had him a little bit below those other guys was he just personally was not scoring as much, didn't seem like perhaps he was quite as capable of taking over games as he had been. And then his playoff performance, and then the way he's played this year without Blake makes me put him back into that tier, I think, despite the fact that he's a year older. So good job, Chris Paul.
And someone we talked about, or we got asked about when we did the other top 10 list about, you know, if you were building a team around them, was the omission of Blake Griffin. And for me, it goes back to this case that we've been making about what does their presence mean? And Blake Griffin is a wonderful player. He's a guy who, of course, is a benefit to any team. But I don't think having him on your team means you're going to have an awesome offense, and it definitely doesn't mean you're going to have an awesome defense. So he's a good player, but these guys in the top 10, top 12 or so, are all players who are more plug-and-play able and can do that in a lot more circumstances than Blake, as great as he is.
My third tier, I had Cousins at 7 and Blake at 8. Remember, Blake didn't have much of a regular season. He probably did not deserve to be in there last year just based on his performance during the regular season last year, but I felt like he could get back to, though, remember, he had that elbow injury, had some injury problems last year too. He was awesome in the playoffs. I felt validated for putting him there based on how he was in the playoffs. He was basically probably the MVP of the first 10 games of the playoffs. And then this year, though, he's totally out of it, not even honorable mention because he just has been injured all year. Obviously, the character concerns now with punching the equipment manager. The fact that they've played pretty well without him, I still think that he's a very important part of their team. I don't,
for sure,
especially in the playoffs. And then Cousins, a big part of why I had him as high was that they had actually defended really well with him on the court, and he had kind of gotten to a new level there, but he just has still continued with the maturity issues this year. Their defense has been awful all year, so that's why he took a drop to me this year.
Certainly. I think you have to do that because at a certain, in an early stage in a guy's development, uncertainty can be considered more of a positive because you're not sure if you're going to get that. But when that uncertainty moves a little bit more in the negative direction, then it starts to count against them.
KD obviously was not in there for me last year just because he was out for the year at the time that I wrote this. And then I also had Marc Gasol as number 9. That was, I actually, one of the things that struck me in doing these lists, I think this year's list is just much better than last year's list, right? Like, I mean, not in terms of how well I'm ranking it, but just the quality of the players on the list, I think it is better, especially when starting with what Steph's been able to do. So, Mark, I mean, I think that was even a little bit dubious last year. And then, you know, he didn't have an unbelievable playoffs. And now, obviously, wasn't that good defensively this year, even before he got hurt. And now, you know, things are kind of, he's not coming back this year. So I think he clearly drops out, even in the honorable mention. Probably my most controversial omission last year was I had Kawhi in the same tier as Gasol and Lillard, but out of the top 10, now I have him as my number 3. And my reasoning last year was just I didn't think he was that good on offense. He didn't do very much offensively against the Clippers. I think you could point to that as one of the big reasons they lost that series, that he wasn't able to take advantage of someone like Jamal Crawford. And even defensively, the Clippers lit the Spurs up pretty badly in that series. I think he has improved a ton this year, to be sure, but I still think it was reasonable to have him ranked as low as I did, especially based on what he ultimately did in the playoffs last year.
But yeah, because last year that was a notable step up for him, and so you have to basically get confirmation on that. And what he did was, by stepping at a level beyond that, he confirmed the prior year, made that a, maybe a new baseline, and then he's outperformed it.
Yeah, Jimmy Butler is, I think, definitely a guy who's totally on the fringe, you know, 15th best player in the league, deserves honorable mention, but just has missed enough time now this year that I dropped him out a little bit.
Between Jimmy Butler and Paul George, who would you rather have?
Paul George, easy.
So would I. Yeah.
Just because he's a better shooter. I think that Jimmy stops the ball a lot. I think George is also a little bit more versatile as a defender, has more length, can shoot threes. I think George is perhaps miscast. Butler might be a slightly better one-on-one scorer than George is. But yeah, I think I would rather have Paul George.
Yeah, I just wanted to, because we hadn't really talked about him yet, and I thought he warranted being talked about.
Wall, to me, dropped out, I think, just because the list is tougher, and also because he hasn't really taken, he might have even taken a step back this year defensively. Klay Thompson, I also mentioned, I think that he hasn't had quite as good of an overall year statistically. I still think he's a great player, but still just the list being a little bit tougher this year. And then another guy who really dropped out, Kyrie Irving, who got injured, has not been the same even on a per-minute basis so far this year. And that's something that hasn't been talked about, is just that compared to last year statistically, coming back from that knee injury, he has not been the same player.
So I wrote a piece, I think it was 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, on Real GM about how concerned I was that that when he hadn't gotten that much better from his rookie year, that he hadn't really improved that much. And then I think it was last year he really stepped that up, partially benefited by, I think he can do a lot off the ball, and getting LeBron helped him with that. And so you're like, oh, great, now he's putting it together. And then this year has kind of been, for me, it's drawn me back to why I was a little skeptical in the first place. It's because when a guy does as well as he does when he comes into the league, like Anthony Davis, you hope that there's going to be this progression. And with him, he's a phenomenal talent, but you don't see his impact on the team as regularly as you would want to for somebody with his prodigious skill level.
Yeah, and we're hearing these grumblings when LeBron missed that game that Kyrie wasn't passing enough. His efficiency is down, even in lower minutes as well this year. So, yeah, and still not someone that you look at as a good defensive player either. So that's why I think he dropped out to me. LaMarcus Aldridge is still kind of firmly in the honorable mention category. Chris Bosh would have been right in there had he not had suffered this another regrettable health issue. Let's see, who else do we have to talk about here is kind of that we have to consider?
Well, I was thinking about looking back at your 2014 list. So Kevin Love was fourth on your list the year before.
Yeah, that doesn't look too good, does it?
Well, that's what happens. He's different now than he was. That's why they're a time capsule in that sense. Is it's not, at least my interpretation of my list is not, it is has no predictive power. It is where they are right now. And if circumstances change, then I don't want it. You have to base your analysis on what you know and what you expect. But if a guy regresses, then a guy regresses.
I think it could be predictive a little bit. I mean, it's almost kind of a what's going to happen over the next year kind of thought too, or at least going into the playoffs. And Love obviously did not make the playoffs that year, but you know, he also was averaging 26-10, and really by any advanced statistic, he was first in KP's win percentage that year, third in PER, fourth in, and I didn't use RPM that year. I used RAPM, which is sort of the forerunner of that, but that's based totally on off. There's no box score prior in that. But you know, and it's, you got to remember, I don't think he's, might not be as good of a player as he was then, but he also is being used completely differently as the foundation of what was a very good Minnesota offense and an average defense, even when he was out there. So he probably was getting a little bit too much crap for his defense at that time too. So yeah, that's one of the ones that really sticks out as him kind of being too high. And then LeBron was number one for me that year. KD two, that was the top tier. That was the year KD won the MVP. But LeBron, I had LeBron a little bit higher just because I thought he was still a better defensive player, but that ended up falling, you know, in subsequent years.
So one thing I wanted to mention when we go through this list is that only one player in either of our top tens is going to be a free agent this year. That's Kevin Durant. And there are so many guys that even we haven't even talked about in this that are going to get max contracts. So it's kind of the idea of where this is limiting things is that there are guys that are worthy. I'm not saying they're not worthy of max contracts that aren't even close to this list.
Yeah, you make a great point there, right? And I think this is really one of the things that struck me going through this is just how many great players there are in the league right now. And then, yeah, then just the weakness of the free agent class. And then a ton of these guys are probably going to be free agents in 2017. I mean, that's the year, you know, I think that it's just reinforced doing this, that saving your money for 2017 is probably the way to go. But even if you don't save your money, there's a possibility the cap could go up by almost $20 million that year too.
Yeah, as long as teams don't spend this summer, but I'm sure they'll spend like drunk sailors because that's what happens.
All right. Anything we got to talk about before we go?
No, I'll have the normal stuff out there, and it's just a League Pass alert, Warriors Weekly, and I'm doing the off-season previews for the Sporting News. The Cavs one actually came out on Friday, and oh, also congratulations! It looks like Notre Dame's about to beat Stephen F. Austin, so congratulations to them.
I haven't watched a single second of the tournament, by the way.
It's been wild, but I think it has been a great illustration of something we talked about. I think it was the last Facebook mailbag about the idea of entertainment versus, you know, rewarding. And so somebody had asked us if we'd be more interested in the NBA playoffs if it modeled March Madness more. And it's like, no, because there's so much random variance in a single game of basketball. And so it's fun. It's a nice, you know, it's a nice diversion. It's kind of like a popcorn movie. But NBA basketball, if you want to say it this way, is too important to make it this trivial.
Yeah, I think that the NCAA tournament is like reality TV where the people who are in it are not really that interesting or that smart, but you just want to see what's going to happen next. And the NCAA tournament or the NBA playoffs are like, you know, prestige Sopranos kind of TV. Maybe that's the way to kind of look at it.
I'm on board, even though I've never watched The Sopranos.
So here's a question for the listeners. Do you think that we should, because you know there are no games the night of the NCAA championship, should we just do like a one-day special Dunked On just to talk about the NCAA championship game? Even though I'm freely admitting right now that, you know, I'll probably watch the Final Four, maybe the regional finals, but I will have watched next to no college basketball before that.
So send in your responses. Care of Nate Duncan NBA on Twitter or Danny LaRue on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, we'll probably try to limit it more to just some of the strategic stuff instead, because we're just not going to know the players that well. But, nope. I mean, I don't know. It'll be interesting. We'll
almost all the NBA prospects are already out. Pirtle's out. The Kentucky guys are out. Ben Simmons was never in. It's crazy.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for listening. We will talk to you all next time.